won't be sorry. And with that, oh God, look at the time. We are out of show. So we have, oh, look, Dan, this just in. The rally apparently is now 1 to 1:30-ish. March at 1:30, music at 3:30. Okay. Perhaps a little bit different than everything I've seen so far, but there we go. If you're there at Shemansky at 1,
it'll all be great.
You'll just sort of figure it out. I mean, you know, timing, schedules, agendas, whatever. We are out of time. I want to let people know, coming right up in just a couple minutes, Lisa Loving hosts Democracy in Motion. She'll be speaking with Portland Public Schools board member Steve Buell about the issues school board members are debating, from school pushout to the right to carry guns. At 10 o'clock, Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, Flashpoints, the Sonoma County Sheriff's Department of California sued for a series of violent in-custody beatings. Also, how the U.S. policy gave rise to the Islamic State, and another episode of Electronic Intifada. At 11 o'clock, Rabia Yemen hosts The Digital Divide. We want to thank all KBOO members for supporting this independent community resource. It is, in fact, your support that makes programs like this possible. Please, if you have not supported us yet, do so today. You can just go to kboo.fm, and we are so out of time. Thank you so much, Sam, and thank you so much, Emma, for joining us this morning. And thank you, Lisa, for letting us run 1 minute over. Okay, we're out.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the first annual Purple Mile Walk, Saturday, October 10th at 10 a.m., starting at the Center for Self-Enhancement in Portland. The walk ends at King Elementary School with a celebration to show solidarity and celebrate survivors of domestic violence. Again, that's the first annual Purple Mile Walk, Saturday, October 10th at 10 a.m., starting at the Center for Self-Enhancement, 3920 North Kirby Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is seeking an individual or group to contract with to help build our next 3-year strategic plan. KBOO embodies equitable social change, shares knowledge, and fosters creativity by delivering locally rooted and diverse music, culture, news, and opinions with a commitment to the voices of oppressed and underserved communities. We have been serving the Portland community since 1968 and are one of the oldest independent community radio stations in the country. The person or group who is selected will co-lead the development of a strategic plan with the KBOO Strategic Planning Support Work Group, made up of volunteers, board members, and staff. More details about the application process can be found at kboo.fm/planRFP2015.
This is KBOO Portland. Time is approximately 9:03 a.m. Coming up, Lisa Loving brings us Democracy in Motion, speaking with Portland Public Schools board member Steve Buell. At 10, I believe we'll be hearing Air Cascadia, followed at 10:15 with Flashpoints. And at 11, Rabia Yemen hosts The Digital Divide. We'll thank the chorus. I'm sorry, I will join the chorus thanking members of the KBOO Foundation for their support during, well, throughout the entire year, especially during our recent fall membership drive. Pay those pledges, folks. And if you have not started that process, you can quite easily at kboo.fm. You click where it says donate today. And now, Lisa Loving.
All right. It's 9:04, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Democracy in Motion, and today, our guest for the first part of the hour, you already heard, is Steve Buell. He's the firebrand on the Portland Public Schools Board. I'm calling you that. Maybe you don't want to hear it. We'll ask you about it in just a second, about what's cooking over there. They've had some big things going on lately. They always have big things going on lately at the Portland Public Schools Board. Later, we talked to Jeff Cohen of RootsAction.org on their petition calling for CNN to bring a progressive journalist onto their presidential debate panel for the Democratic Party debates next week. CNN basically has it packed with conservatives, which is funny in itself. So good morning. It's live radio. We're running in here. And Steve, thanks for being here.
It's wonderful to be here.
It's beautiful outside. It's fall, school starting. Every Monday, right? Is it every Monday school board meetings for people that
generally
are listening?
Generally Tuesday. No.
Oh, Tuesday now.
Monday, Tuesday, so it didn't intermingle with the after school meetings for most schools with their teachers.
So, Steve, I read the daily newspaper to get a lot of my coverage of the school board meeting, and what I hope with this show is that people will listen to what you have to say and they'll get kind of energized about maybe plugging in to get active with the Portland schools, because a lot of times in the past you have different kinds of people, you know, being on the school board, but a lot of times a lot of people feel as if they're sort of corporate people who don't really open the doors and welcome the community in, and I think maybe you're the opposite of that kind of person. So talk about your vision for the school board and what kind of work you're doing and what role our listeners should have in that right now. Well, let's just start there.
There was a big change in the school board, and for three members said they wouldn't run, and July 1st we had in four new people.
And that this
and
year.
That's this year, and it's a hugely different attitude on the Portland School Board. It is more welcoming you in. It is more we want to hear what you have to say. It is more we want to focus on children than it was before. And it's been great for me. You can call me the firebrand if you would like, but I haven't had to be the firebrand, so to speak, because these people that are on the school board now seem to be a lot more reasonable, a lot more oriented towards kids than I was working really hard for 2 years just trying to upset the place so people would understand that that's not how it was working.
And you've been active with Save Our Schools, SOS.
Yeah, Oregon Save
Oregon
Our Schools.
Oregon SOS, which I think is on Facebook. If people are interested in looking around at what's going on there, keep going.
Oregon Save Our Schools is a great Facebook place to go to find out about what's really happening in the schools. Basically, there's a lot of Oregon Save Our Schools is anti-corporate reform, basically. All the testing, all the data gathering, the types of things that really are causing more problems in the schools than they're helping. So that aspect is, and I was one of the original founders of that about 4 years ago.
When you first started getting active with Oregon SOS, what was your vision for what you wanted to do with your time? I'm asking these questions, listeners, because do you know what? This is Democracy in Motion, and this is a show about electoral politics. And one of the things I'm putting this out that we need is more people like you to stand up and run for office and put your hands on the driver's wheel or whatever it is, the joystick. I don't know if you guys have a joystick or a driver's wheel over the school board. We don't have enough people getting involved in these politics, and we see them as being kind of dirty, like politics is dirty, and there are aspects of it that are difficult. But I want to hear from Steve, who's just, he's more like an everyday person and less like, I don't know, a Kennedy. Now, you could see yourself as a Kennedy. You've got a very fancy family, and your brother's very accomplished, too. But what I'm getting at is, why would an everyday person want to be on the school board or be an elected official? And so when you started with Oregon SOS 4 years ago, what did you think you were going to end up doing?
Well, the Oregon SOS, we were just attacking the corporate reform movement.
Especially the testing really hard,
but also the data gathering. Also, just if you sit down and talk to people in that organization, they're going to tell you they have a vision for how the school should work. And it's you educate every child to the best that you can. And it's a singular vision and how important education is. And the other thing is protecting public education really is also a large part of that particular vision, because we haven't had it in Oregon, but a lot of places back east, they'll take your public school and they'll give it to the charter school and off they go. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. But I got involved way back when I was 28 years old in politics is 1975, and I was teaching political science up at Clackamas High School. And so I thought, geez, I need to go down and see what my school board is doing, because I wasn't teaching in Portland. So I went down and I went, oh, wow, we really have work to do. And so I've really been interested in the Portland School Board ever since then. And I retired in 2010 from teaching for 40 years. And I, that was a natural thing to kind of do, to get involved with something that I'd been interested in for 30 or so years.
And now, I met you for the first time when the state of Oregon hired Rudy Carew to be the director of the state. Can you just tell that story briefly? And then I want to get into what you're dealing with Portland Public Schools. But what?
Well, they hired Rudy Carew, and they wanted someone who was kind of, who would be the face of public education and would really push for, really, in Oregon, it's business controlling education, and that's what it was down at the state. And we have a lot of people in Oregon Save Our Schools who've been around for a long time, and they knew Rudy Carew. They knew that he wasn't the guy that you wanted in Oregon to lead public
Wrecking
education.
Wrecking Crew is what people call him.
Yes,
I mean,
and
he sort of specialized in going around the country and destroying education departments. That's a harsh thing for me to say as a person who covered that as a journalist, but that is what he did. He went all over the country and basically dismantled education departments and then was fired from his job, and I'm not exaggerating that. How many places? Four places? Five places?
There were several places, mm-hmm, but he did have a good heart, mm-hmm, but The State Department of Education does not have it together, and Kitzhaber was particularly bad in education, and the Oregon Educational Investment Board was really in the pockets of the people who wanted to push for the corporate reform movement. And so, and you couldn't, it was very, very hard to talk to them. They would not even sit down and really talk to you about the issues. And it's the same way with Oregon Department of Education. It's hard to get them to. They're a little better now under, and the governor is a lot better educationally and willing to talk to people and so forth. Kitzhaber had just become ridiculous. And I went to almost every one of those meetings for 3 years at the Oregon Investment Board, and oh man, it was really bad.
And so, again, you're listening to Democracy in Motion on KBOO Community Radio in beautiful Cascadia. Our guest this morning is Steve Buell. He's on the Portland Public Schools Board. And we're just doing this, you know, flying leap at trying to bring people into Steve's world, which is a fascinating place. He cannot stay for the whole hour. I wish you could. We need to bring you back on the air. But the thing that I really find valuable about Steve's perspective is, again, he's been here for a long time, and to back into that State Board of Higher Education. Steve mentioned the Oregon Education Investment Board. When Kitzhaber was elected governor, he started fracturing, and then he hired Rudy Carew. They started basically dismantling what had been the State Department of Higher, no, the State Education.
Well, they
Board.
Really State. Dismantled the way that they were putting together education in Oregon.
So they broke off part of the college system now is up here. The early childhood education system is sort of broken off and stuck to the side also. They have a whole different panel of people that runs that. And then there's the Oregon Education Investment Board, and that's dangling in there too.
And that's
is that
pretty,
the status
that's
right
done.
Now? The Oregon, and now they're done with that.
They're
so
done
that's
with
gone.
The Oregon Educational Investment Board. They've dismantled it, and they have a person who kind of is in charge of a small group of people who are carrying forward some of their work that they didn't want to dismantle.
And just to be clear, I mean, so, and we were talking a little bit about the Oregonians' coverage in the lobby, but the Oregonians' coverage has shown that Oregon has one of the worst graduation rates in the country.
Oh, sure.
Would you dispute that? The worst no. white students' graduation rate, the sixth worst graduation rate for African-American students is what I saw in Betsy Hammond's coverage from a couple of years ago. So in short now, we have this State Board of Higher Education that theoretically regulates all the school boards all over the state. It's kind of in, I'm going to say it, Steve, it's in disarray. It's been fractured. Part of it was created. Now it's been uncreated. It's kind of not, what is your take on that one part? Because that gets me, whatever happened to the state. We don't have a state board of education anymore.
We have a state board of education.
Okay.
But basically what happened is that really a lot of the business interests in Oregon decided that they liked the new reform movement, And so they put together a plan, and that's about 4 years ago, in a group called LearnWorks, and they put forward a plan which got pushed through as the new plan for education in the state of Oregon. And then they took that particular plan, and the OEIB pushed it into the ODE. So now it's the plan for the whole state of Oregon.
Okay.
And a lot of it comes, of course, out of the federal government, where you have Arnie Duncan, who's now resigning, and they put in the guys worse, it appears. It's trying to fight for having good, solid education in every one of your schools and every one of your classrooms. It's a really hard fight right now, because it's more about a lot of people making money on education who really don't care about your kids. And there's a lot of that, and that's a blanket statement, but it's not that far removed from the truth.
Later, I want to ask you, let's try to make a list of the people that do that, because it would surprise a lot of listeners, although parents know. Hey, we've got a caller. The number to call, 503-231-8187. Chris, is it you? What's going on?
Hey, just turned on my radio. Love to hear Steve Buell's voice. Yeah, Steve, thank you for being such a champion for educators and students, especially. It's really awesome to hear that you're on here talking about these issues. I wondered also if you could speak a little bit to TSPC, the Teacher Standards and Practice Commission, and how that's organized at the state level. And that's also an appointed board, right? And I'm hearing, too, that some of the stuff around equity could come into our evaluations through TSPC, and I'm not sure if you're aware of that, but that's another organized body that has a lot of authority over what happens in classrooms, because they're the ones that hold our licenses, right?
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
I don't know if you have any perspective on how we can reform that particular entity, maybe moving away from appointments or somehow making that process a little more democratic than it is right now. And then also wanted to point out to folks that there's an awesome teacher conference that's going on today. The Teaching with Purpose conference is happening out at Park Rose High School. And there's a lot of really excellent educators there who are going to be giving some awesome sessions on culturally relevant teaching practices, which I think is really important to bringing equity into every classroom and every school in every district. So I just wanted to let educators know to definitely check that out. I'm going to be headed there as well. And Mr. Buell, I don't know if you have time today, but it would be awesome if you could make an appearance and say hi to us out there.
great. Thanks a lot for calling, Chris. And I'm going to start. I'm looking up the Teaching with Purpose conference. I should have been on that. Teaching with Purpose conference is a really super duper important event. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a few moments. But oh my gosh, Tim Wise is out there. In fact, Tim Wise is going to be speaking at the Teaching with Purpose conference in a half hour. That's where you're really going, Steve, isn't it? You're booking out there to listen to Steve. But anyway, Chris, who is an educator, brought this issue up about the Teacher Standards and Practices Commission. My husband is a kind of a reformed teacher. That TSPC is so far behind in its work that when you go to their website, they haven't updated it. And they have a big bug at the top that says, for anyone who's applied for their teaching license, we're now processing the ones that were sent in a year ago. We will soon get to the ones that were sent in 6 months ago. They say it right at the top of their website that they say that they're inadequate at the top of their website. That's a rude thing to say, but they do. So go ahead with, if you feel like answering some of the issues that awesome Chris talked about.
I don't have a real good knowledge of the TSPC and how they work, so it's hard for me to really talk about them. It doesn't sound like it's particularly good. I do have a really good solid background about the teacher evaluations that he missed. One of the things they're starting to do in Oregon coming up is linking the teacher evaluations to the test scores of children, which has been proven all across the country. Basically, that's an impossibility. It doesn't work, and yet we go ahead and do it anyway. It's part of the problem in education today is that we get something, we decide it works, even if it doesn't. I mean, you can't, how do you take children's test scores and link them directly? There's so many things involved in any of the type of work they're doing around that area is really weak. Portland Public Schools, the Portland Association of Teachers has sat down and really worked on a pretty good evaluation of teachers. They want teachers evaluated well, so do I, but it's not by their test scores, even though that's a portion of it. So that really is bothersome to me. He mentioned culturally relevant curriculum. That's one of the things that I'm really starting to push on and work on in three areas. One, we need to have culturally relevant history embedded in the history that we teach, and we need to make sure that gets done. And in order to do that, you have to make it so teachers can actually do that and do that fairly easily, because they're so busy during the school year, they hardly have time to do anything. A new unit is incredibly hard. It's unbelievable how busy some of our teachers are. And so I'm trying to get a website developed where you can go and get that information pretty easily that you need in order to do that. And then I talked to some kids out at Epano, and they really, and I'm really going to support this, they want to have a cultural studies class, an elective, at least in every high school.
APANO, Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon. Mm-hmm.
And this ally is the student group. And they're pushing that. In fact, on the 15th, there's they're having a kind of a press conference rally get together concerning that. I don't know the particulars exactly, but I'm actually going to speak at that because it's something we need to do. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to, for 2 years on the school board, I tried to get somebody to look at that and do it. Well, now with the new board, we're going to be able to get it done. I'm pretty sure we'll get it done by the end of this year for sure.
If you just tuned in, this is A Democracy in Motion. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and we're live in the studio with Steve Buell. He's on the Portland Public Schools Board, and we're talking about his work. This is a show looking at the electoral process and your role in it, listeners. So, Steve, it must have been weird, though, for you when you had fought the dragon so long, and then suddenly you're on the board. So as you're on the inside, does it look different than when you were on the outside? Are you learning things that shock you that you can't share? Are you learning that the situation's better or worse than you thought? What did you learn when you were able to come into the haloed halls of being a school board member?
Well,
is there secret information?
I was a school board member in 1979 to 83.
Okay,
so I had a pretty good background on what was taking place, how schools work. And I'd paid attention then, since then. I'd lived in Portland. I'd follow the school board. I wasn't like there every day, which I was at one period and which I am kind of now. But it isn't much different than what I thought. It was different on the school board. When I first came in with the old members of the school board, they'd pretty much said, we're just going to shut you out. You don't get to do anything, period. You don't get to bring anything. You don't get to put things. We don't care what you have to say. Da, da, da. That was the old school board up until now. But everything else was about like I thought it was. There are some serious problems in Portland schools, but there's also some wonderful things. But there's problems too. One of the things that we don't have down yet is how really to focus on children in the classroom. And we have a new guy by the name of Chris Rousseau, who's the teaching and learning new person in Portland, and I think he's got a pretty good attitude about that, trying to get the real learning in the classroom consistently throughout our district. In some schools you go and it's wonderful. In other schools you go and it's really in bad shape. And a lot of times it's economics is the difference. And it has a huge play because we're one of the things we're struggling with right now is how to work with, you have to have children be engaged in what they're learning. That's the trick. If you get children engaged in what they're learning and you go into a classroom, kids can be running all over the place. But if they're doing what you want them to do, then that works. And how you get to that point has this huge, there's so many variables that come in. But two of the main ones, of course, is what you're teaching. And the other is the behavioral plan that you have and how that works. Because if you just let kids run around and go nuts, then it's very difficult to make your school, your classroom work. It doesn't work. And so, and we are in this transition period between trying to get do way less suspending of kids home. It doesn't, and I'm totally against suspension. It's absolutely the wrong approach. A kid's misbehaving or even misses school, we'll send them home. It happens all over the country, but it's the wrong approach. But we haven't put something good in its place yet. And so there's this conflict between the community saying, okay, we don't want you to suspend our children, and the fact that you, then what is it you're going to do? What follow-through do you have? What wraparound services do you have for children? What's your discipline structure going to be like? And so you really have to have two groups come together and work together in order to make it work. And one is the community, and the other is actually the teachers' union, because they're the people who are on the front lines. They're the people all the time that have to deal with kids. So you have to have those two groups come together. And there wasn't. It's one of the things I'm trying to do is bring those groups together so they can work together, so it will actually work for children in our schools, which right now in a lot of places we're struggling.
It's patchy, and I know that new projects have rolled out around restorative justice. Am I using the right term?
Yes, restorative justice and PBIS, which is a form which includes people and brings people in. So there's a lot of good. There's
What's
good work
PBIS?
Doing.
PBIS? I've never heard of that. He's rolled in his eyes. He's like, oh God, I don't know.
PBIS. No, I am. It's tip of my tongue. it's basically a system which gets people working together to help children in a specific way, and you include parents in there. It's how you approach it. You do a lot better work on cultural norms and so forth than we're doing in many cases right now.
Yeah, positive behavior interventions, mm-hmm. and supports. I'm mm-hmm. just a nerd. I mm-hmm. had to look it up.
No, it's yes. Thank you. You always. It's your fear always to be on radio and have them ask you a question that you should definitely know, and you're just pulling it out.
It's wonky. You know? It's a wonky question. What do those letters stand for? This is Democracy in Motion. We're talking with Steve Buell. He's on the Portland Schools Board. We have a caller. It's Jeff in Northeast. Jeff, what are you thinking about today?
I wanted to address the equity question again with Steve Buell. Hello, Steve. This is Jeff Kippelman. I'm a teacher with PPS.
How you doing?
Good. I wanted to bring up Matthew Prophet and the African baseline essays, the African American baseline essays.
Good stuff. I was on the board when we devised that. Was one of the people who worked hard and pushed for that.
Yeah.
Also, Matthew Prophet was. I was in charge of the recruitment of him in a lot of ways, setting up the system we used that ended up recruiting him. Great guy.
So what happened to the baseline essays? Nobody talks about them anymore. I thought that was a great stride for PPS achieving equity with the African American community.
Well, I'm in the process of really trying to put together this website, which will bring back a lot of the information that's in there. And they went on and did some other work too, for other than just for African American, the African American students. They did work around some other things with other essays that are out there.
Do you remember though why?
It was really good stuff, and we backed away from that. We moved into some other areas, which are good areas, trying to get people to be more culturally aware in their own lives. But in the end, really what we're about is kids. And while you want to do the one, you also want to be doing in the classroom stuff that's really good for children and making sure teachers have access to those materials and are encouraged to really do that work.
But to be fair, I think what Jeff is asking is how come all this effort was done, it was put into creating them, and then they were never really implemented? And they actually are on the Portland Public Schools website. All those essays, all that education material, it's not dead. It's actually on there. Conservatives attacked it. There were people who, as I recall, people who said that the, basically they attacked the scholarship of it in a really insulting way. I'm putting that out. But can you just address that in your opinion? Like, who really squashed it and kept it from being? I think that you could say truly that it was blocked from being implemented across the district. I'm not sure if you were there when that happened.
I don't think it was blocked. But what happens in education, and I think a lot of people don't think in broader terms of education. If you go back to, ITIP, which was a system set up by Madeline Hunter from UCLA, which teaches you how to do presentations in your classroom. Excellent stuff. One of the best things in the last 40 years that we had. That totally gone. The whole point, that's totally gone. And I think the same type of thing happened with the baseline essays. They just kind of get shuffled off and there's new priorities and so forth. They don't fit in with the Common Core and on you go. And I don't think it was a block. I think it was, it's where you put your energies. There's so many things going on that you have to decide where your energies are going to go. And people move their energies away from in the classroom and being a culturally relevant curriculum in the classroom. And it was a mistake. And hopefully we're going to shift back.
We are going to go to Mike in Vancouver. Mike, are you there?
Good morning.
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
So one of the alternatives that instantly came to mind for me when you were talking about alternatives to suspension and that sort of thing, dealing with the students directly, like what is their situation, what's going on? And I did a lot of growing up in Minnesota back in the 80s, graduated mid-80s, and back then it was well known that, and now that, Minnesota school districts are very highly rated, 2, 3, 4, whatever, for years and years and years. And then I moved out here, back home, essentially. But seemed like things were a little bit behind here. And this is in Vancouver, Washington. And but the most striking thing when it came from, if I put on my student's hat from a student's perspective, is the opportunities. Because and flexibility, because out here, the ALC alternative learning centers that got kids back on track in a kind of a self-guided system, less supervised because they were troubled kids or having issues or pregnancies or things like that. It gave them some flexibility, and they were able to graduate ahead of the school in some cases because they were self-motivated. But that was only because they were mess-ups, screw-ups, problems, right? But in Minnesota, the only way you could get into those courses and that sort of format was because you were an honor student. Okay, so it shows you the difference.
Yeah, that's interesting.
In focus.
Okay.
It shows, and I think that could be used as a way to help excellent kids that are bored stiff.
Yeah.
And it'll also help the ones that need that more flexibility because of their family life or whatever.
So thanks a
thank
lot,
very
Mike.
Much.
Thanks for calling. Right on.
One of the things we're trying to do on the school board now is to rejuvenate Benson High School. And I think that kind of talks a lot to what he's talking about is you've got a high school where you have those hands-on activities and a lot of training that you can get. And it's Benson at one time was probably the number one technological high school in America. I mean, it's a fabulous high school. And it lost. And I think that was political because we're talking about here. The people up in the West Hills with a lot of money. It lost a lot of its. It lost a lot of students, for one thing, but it also lost some other programs. Right. It just lost a lot of that flavor of being, okay, we're really a great high school, and I think we're trying to bring that back. Mm-hmm. I hope we can.
Mm-hmm. We have a few minutes left with Steve Buell. Steve, now I would like to just take a great big backhoe and back into, we've had people call, we've had people ask questions about what matters to them, baseline essays, which goes basically down to equity and racism. You know, we've talked about the equity evaluations. Here's someone who just called Mike to talk about, you know, maybe what's a better approach to helping suspend students because you feel very strongly about it. Now that you're in the middle of it, what do you think all of us should know about what are the most important issues that the district has to deal with? What are the real hot potatoes that we might not be aware of?
Well, there's I don't think it's necessarily the same thing. I don't think we always deal with the most important issues. We have our own issues that we're dealing with and are important. But sometimes the most important issue really is how we're teaching in the classroom. And we have all these children who really aren't learning to read. That's the most important issue. The quality of our education in this city of Portland, and that it's a high quality every place that we look, which that's really the singular important issue. But there's a couple, three issues that are going on right now. One is the boundary changes, and so you're where are you going to change the boundaries? And we have the school boundaries deciding who can go to what school,
that want to transfer and go to a different school if it's better. I'm not always sure.
We kind of dealt a little bit with the transfer, but the problem is you have some schools that are crowded and some that are not. And so where do you make the shifts? And boundary issues always, oh man, they're a lose-lose situation for a school board member. If you move a child's address to a school that the parent likes less, wow, I mean, it's really something. So that's coming up and we're working on that this year. That's big. The disparate discipline is a huge issue, and it's a super important issue. And this whole discipline issue, we really don't even have. We're in a transition period. We didn't put together we have a booklet that tells teachers how to, what happens, how you should deal with a child's behavior. We have a booklet that tells you that, but that booklet's kind of outdated because it was suspension, suspension, suspension. And so we're now working, and that's a huge issue, and that goes to the real issue of racism and the real issues of equity and so forth.
Yeah, let me just stop and just for people to think about for a second, when we're talking about disparate discipline, you're talking about the schools to prison pipeline and the ways that especially students of color, especially African-American students, just get disciplined disproportionately for more subjective reasons. So now the third thing that you think is
So we're looking at doing a bond, the second bond on building schools, and we're in the middle of kind of processing through what we'll do with that. How big will it be? What will it do? And I think there's going to be a little bit of disagreement on the school board over that.
These bond issues are huge, and Portland Public Schools passed a bond a couple years ago, and that's meant for seismic upgrades and also expansion of a couple high schools.
Yeah, Roosevelt High School, Grant High School, and Franklin.
Right.
And they didn't so much expand them as modernize them. Most of our buildings are, almost all of them, are 50 or more years old.
Are they all unreinforced masonry buildings too?
No, but we are working on the seismic upgrades, and that was part of it. But but the problem is that for a long time, we didn't really maintain them. Last 25 years, we didn't maintain them very well. And so you've got problems throughout. I mean, we did a lot of great work in the first bond. I mean, we did put on roofs that were leaking and so forth. We did seismic upgrades. We did a lot of places for helping people in wheelchairs and so forth be able to get in, elevators we put in, and it's really some nice work, actually.
I'm thinking, when I think of the buildings, I'm thinking of about 15 years ago when I was a reporter covering the big, the Portland schools. I think it was in 2002, 2001, basically fired all the janitors, and I went and interviewed a lot of janitors, and I was surprised at how gifted they were, how technical they were, because as far as I was concerned, a janitor cleans a toilet or something like that. But these people we're talking about actually know the boiler has been partially digitized but not completely, and it's connected to the analog system in the whatchamacallit room. And so these people were troubleshooting a lot of the, you know, because like you said, some of these buildings are 50, 60, 70 years old or older. So trying to bring them into the modern age is a difficult thing. And there's so many of them. I mean, Portland Public Schools is a city.
84 buildings or something.
It's a city. I mean, it's a small town.
It's huge.
But again, it goes back to what you were saying, where you're trying to educate the teachers about fairness and discipline, and so you've got some papers that you want to give them to educate them. But how do you educate? I don't even know how many staff you have, and when it comes to the school pushout thing, you're talking about everyone in the building is impacted by that.
3,000 teachers.
That's amazing. So you can't turn that aircraft carrier on a dime. So I want to go back to what you said about the bond. bond measure that you guys have coming up. We have a few more minutes, and then we're going to talk to Jeff Cohen. We're going to get Jeff Cohen on the line and change the subject to the Democratic debates coming up on Tuesday. But people want to know about this bond measure, because this is the thing. We have a love-hate relationship with the schools in the United States of America. We love them, we hate them, we love them, we hate them. Everything's their fault. Oh no, it's a beautiful center of children and love. We just don't know what we think. So I've heard a lot of people freaking out about this bond. Why this bond? What is it that's different? I hear you saying that you're debating it, but talk about a little bit more of the details in there, what you think you're going to do with that.
I think the love-hate thing is that people love their children's actual teachers in their actual school. They go up, they're treated well, they have their, but they look over at somebody else's school and go, oh, well, that's not a very good school. And that's, I think, part of it. I really do. But the bond, the problem with the bond to some degree is that the first bond we did, which was really well done, but it strings out for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. Well, now that you do a new bond, you have to put it on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
And so where people are going, this is a big bond. Well, now you're going to make it much bigger and even more so. And so that I think is going to be a problem. I don't think anybody can look and say, you know, we don't need to take care of our schools, because we do. And we want to make sure, I mean, everybody's worried about the earthquake, but we want to make sure that we're prepared for that and so forth. And you should maintain public buildings. Those are all things that everybody agrees with. But the problem is that it's really kind of got an 8-year tail on mm-hmm. this bond, which I thought to try and get a 4-year tail on it. So it goes out for 4 years, then you have a new one and you're pretty much now doing stuff. But we didn't do that. And so I think it's going to be a little controversial in the end. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure exactly where the school board will come down on it, or where the community will come down on it. If you take, it doesn't double your property taxes, it doubles maybe, or even more so, what you pay for this particular bond
right. On
your property taxes.
Uh-huh. And our property taxes are coming up, I believe, next month. So we've got 5 minutes left with Steve Buell. Steve, this is what I want to do. I want to try to see if we can get people who listen to this show, who listen to KBOO, to get into the habit of watching the school board meeting. Now, you don't have to physically be there. You can actually watch it on your computer or TV.
Yeah.
You can watch it. And I think that people should get into the habit of doing that. So, Steve, go ahead. I was going to say, how do you watch a school board meeting, and why should people watch them?
Well, the school has, the Portland Public Schools has 48,000 children that it educates. It's got a budget of $500 million. It's got a bond of close to $500 million that are going on. So that's $1 billion of your tax dollars are going there. It has about 100 properties throughout the whole entire community. It's got 6,000 employees. It's a big thing. It's just a bit large government body that you need to really pay attention to, I believe. And people don't. And they don't. You have people who can name everybody on the city council or everybody on the county commission, but they can't tell you one person from another on the Portland School Board, which is fine, except that it's a big deal. You need to really pay attention. And you can watch the meetings. Some of them are pretty boring. Some are not. Some are pretty fun. And it depends on what's going on. But there's a website that you can go to, and that's one of the things I would do. And there's some other websites. For instance, North Northeast Coalition is a Facebook page, and they discuss all sorts of school issues on there. And it's really a good Facebook page. But you should go down once in a while and look and see how it really works before you start saying, oh, this is good or this is bad. Go down and at least see how it works a little, and then start. And you can also get involved. Really, it's great to be involved and understand the school board, but it's even better if you go down to your school and get involved and help out in your school with what's going on there. I think that's a great way for parents to be involved, or anyone.
A school district office is located at 501 North Dixon. It's near the Moda Center. When are the meetings again?
Tuesday evening, 6 o'clock usually.
Okay. And sometimes there's kind of a lot of excitement. Other times everybody's just getting stuff done. But it's also an opportunity for you to meet bigwigs and tell them what you think. You should consider being nice. Be nice. Don't unload on people. I'm just saying. But you can go down there and tell people what you actually think, which is a rare thing, actually.
There's two other things that I think make sense. One, you can sign up to speak. They let a certain number of people speak. But another thing you can do is to write the school board or write the superintendent. That's easy to do. Get an email and you can go and go to the school board, the website, and it has a board thing. You can just write them all. And you can also pay attention to what people say to a certain degree, believe it or not, in the comments for education stories. Sometimes you get some pretty good ones. Sometimes they're horrible, of course. So people are pretty...
Reader comments in the newspaper. Yes. Not enough people covered the school board meetings. I mean, in towns that I've worked at before, every media outlet covered it, but that's not true here.
The Oregonian did a really nice job for three years covering it, and now they have a good reporter, but she's spread too thin. Mm-hmm. They had a reporter that was solely covering...
Is it Janie Haar?
No, it was... Here we go again.
Oh, never mind. No, so you're about to turn into a pumpkin. I know that you have to go to an appointment right now. We've got 30 seconds until 9:45, and I don't want you to be late, Steve. But people, I'm going to ask you to go to your interweb or go somewhere and look up the addresses for the school board members, because they have too many digits for me to name over the air. But I will try to print them out and put them by the front desk, and Will could give them to you, the email addresses and phone numbers to people on the school board. What's the most important thing for people to know, Steve? Last thing people should know about your work and the Portland Public Schools.
I think we're really trying to improve some things, and coming forward and supporting those improvements will help, because you don't always get to improve things without a fight. And so coming forward and being on the right side of that fight is really helpful. For a long time, a lot of people were on the wrong side of a lot of the fights in the school board.
Well, I want to say, Steve Buell, Portland Public Schools Board, thank you so much for being on the air with us this morning. Thanks for coming down. Right on. And this is live radio, and as Steve gets up and goes to his appointment, maybe he'll even give me a hug or something like that, which is fun. Stay tuned. In a second, we're going to be talking with Jeff Cohen about what's going on with CNN and the Democratic Party debate.
Nicole Duncan.
All right, and you are listening to Democracy in Motion. This is KBOO Portland. It's 9:46 in gorgeous Cascadia. That's Oregon, Southwest Washington, and the gorgeous Columbia Gorge. This is a super fascinating segment that caught me by surprise this morning. We've got Jeff Cohen on the phone. He's the director of the Park Center for Independent Media at Ithaca College in New York and the author of Cable News Confidential. That's a really good book. I know we've had that on the air here before. And Jeff co-founded Roots Action, which initiated a petition to get CNN to include a progressive person on the panel that they're putting together for next week's Democratic Party debates. Jeff, thank you for being with us.
Hey, great to be with you.
Jeff, talk about this issue. How did you get involved? How does CNN decide that? How do they control that? I guess it's their kitchen. Talk about it.
Their kitchen, and they've always catered to the right wing. If people watched the last Republican debate, they would have seen two people on the panel that CNN puts forward as objective or neutral or nonpartisan. One was an anchor, and one was their correspondent, Dana Bash. Along with those two CNN employees, they had a right-wing talk show host named Hugh Hewitt from the proudly conservative right-wing media company called Salem Media. And so coming up on Tuesday, CNN is hosting a Democratic debate. Are they including a progressive journalist on the panel of questioners, perhaps someone from Mother Jones, perhaps someone from Democracy Now!, perhaps someone from The Nation? You know, there are a lot of progressive, respected news outlets, but CNN doesn't feel the need to include a progressive on their panel of questioners for the upcoming debate on Tuesday of the Democratic presidential candidates, as they included a Republican, a right-wing questioner on their panel of questioners last month. So Roots Action has initiated a petition, rootsaction.org, to CNN. We initiated it this morning, and it's getting huge buzz because people, I think, assumed that CNN would be somewhat balanced. But as you mentioned my book, Cable News Confidential, I know a little bit about CNN, and they've got a history of decades of, you know, including the right wing while excluding the left.
Jeff, I'm freaking out a little bit because you said Hugh Hewitt from Salem Media Corporation. Yeah. I guess it says it's based in Camarillo. Okay, full disclosure, I used to work for Salem Media. I was a fill-in talk radio host for a right-wing conservative station. And part of what they do is they broadcast right here from Salem, Oregon. And it made me wonder if Hugh Hewitt's biggest claim to fame is Salem Media. There's been some shift there. That freaks me out a little bit.
Oh, it's a completely right-wing company now. They have a conservative Christian part of it, but a lot of it is just right-wing. They now own Regnery, so their authors include Ann Coulter, Michelle Malkin, Donald Trump. They have a Salem radio network where all of the hosts are right-wing.
Right.
And so CNN, when they did their Republican debate, made a partnership with Salem. And by the way, CNN or Salem has announced that they've got a partnership for two upcoming Republican debates. So I don't know, are they going to have Ann Coulter be one of the questioners? She's one of Salem's authors. The point is that Tuesday we have a debate coming up, and CNN has announced that they're going to have four CNN employees and not one independent, respected, progressive journalist on the panel. So, I mean, I've never, you know, it's a clear example, once again, of mainstream corporate media pandering, orienting to the right wing, catering to the right wing, while feeling no need whatsoever to be balanced and include, why isn't Amy Goodman on the panel for Tuesday? Why isn't Juan Gonzalez one of the people on the panel? Or perhaps Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editor of The Nation. These outlets, just like Hugh Hewitt, by the way, when Hugh Hewitt was asking questions at the CNN debate at the Reagan Library, he was saying things like, well, all of you are more qualified than Hillary Clinton in his questioning. President Obama, his knees buckled over Syria. Mm-hmm. These were the tenor. This is the way that Hugh Hewitt, by CNN including a conservative as a questioner, sort of impacted the tenor of the debate. But CNN, in this upcoming Democratic debate for Tuesday, doesn't feel the need, at least not so far, to include a progressive journalist who might impact the tenor of the debate. And obviously there are many institutions, many independent progressive journalistic institutions, where there are journalists who have not taken sides within the Democratic Party primaries, who could join that panel and ask questions that will not otherwise be asked by that panel.
So I see on here that the panel's going to be Hugh. I'm sorry, I'm not laughing. Salem Media, they also included Michael Medved. You may not be aware, the guy that used to, he used to do film reviews, but every year he does a Bigfoot show because he believes in Bigfoot. So why don't they put Bigfoot on there? I mean, I'm just kidding. Laura Ingraham is also another person that has cycled through that little mill. And so from what I understand from these notes, it says that Anderson Cooper, Don Lemon, and Juan Carlos Lopez from CNN and Espanol, those are the other people that are going to be on the panel?
Yeah, and Dana Bash, their correspondent, who is on the Republican panel, questioning the Republicans. But again, this is so typical. You know, I used to, in my book, Cable News Confidential, I have two chapters about my experiences at CNN. For decades, they had far-right, emphatic, loud voices, Pat Buchanan, Bob Novak, John Sununu. And then representing the left, they'd either have nobody, or they'd have like a Wall Street Journal reporter for the left, or they'd have a Time magazine columnist for the left. And so, you know, I've got a couple chapters in my book about how CNN in the 80s and 90s and into the 21st century has always been catering to the right wing. And to me, this series of debates where they include a right winger to question Republicans, but they don't include a left journalist to question Democrats, it's just more of the same. So if people want to express themselves, they could write CNN on their own, just go to the website, or they could join a petition, which is at rootsactiononeword.org.
Can you talk a little bit about, I was just at a journalism conference this past weekend, and one of the fascinating discussions I heard was, and it was about objectivity, right? And most of the time, journalists don't, we don't feel like talking about objectivity because been there, done that, you know, blah, 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 blah. Objectivity is kind, it's a myth, basically. Everybody's got a point of view. But this turned into one of the most fascinating conversations because there were people there that were from Missouri who had to deal with reader comments as the fallout to some of their Ferguson coverage. And they're just literally, they, even people who expect that sort of watershed of I'm just going to come out and say it, hate and negativity, which I personally, if you go and listen to Hugh Hewitt, there's a lot of that coming from Hugh Hewitt. And I don't mean to be rude or judgmental, but it's just a fact. But we talked about how some of the people from Missouri were saying, well, we've heard stories about African-American journalists who were told that they could not cover Ferguson, Missouri because they wouldn't be objective.
Yeah, but they're not objective because they're not white males.
Right, so I mean, white males, you know, are the best people to cover that. No offense, white males. But see, what gets me with this whole issue that you're talking about with the Democrat, by the way, I'm curious what the Democratic National Committee does because or thinks about that, because they're not a bunch of people with white hats. No offense to them. But it just strikes me as, you know, how it's like CNN, this is entertainment. It's like a dodgeball game. Let's be real. I'm just saying that. And that they included also... what's his name? That Don Lemon, who is the guy that so many of us love to laugh at. You can't take, this is rude. You can't necessarily see that as a news broadcast. It's like a dodgeball tournament. They set that up like that directly.
It's interesting that they've included Don Lemon. Lemon has been famous in the last few weeks for his softball questioning of Donald Trump. And I mean, Donald Trump, the coverage, I think people will write volumes of media criticism on how the media have treated Trump over the last few months. We know for months on the nightly newscasts on ABC, CBS, and NBC, for a number of months, he was getting more coverage than all other candidates combined. All 20 other candidates combined did not get as much coverage as Trump. Trump has taken two of the most powerful mainstream journalists up on his helicopter ride, and they were gleeful like school kids taking selfies with the Donald. And so when I hear people talk about objectivity, and I know how cozy the mainstream media elite, I used to work there, how cozy the mainstream media elite is with the political and corporate elites, then you realize this idea of objectivity. Objectivity means that Martha Raddatz of ABC News, their chief global affairs columnist, correspondent, can take a helicopter ride with Donald Trump and be all chummy, and then do an interview with Bernie Sanders on This Week, their biggest political show, and basically take the perspective that he's going to leave us defenseless, that he's a complete pacifist of her questioning. So objectivity as practiced by the mainstream media means we have the objective of cozying up to the establishment, and you guys in the quote alternative or independent media don't. That's what they mean. And again, when I hear them claim to be fair or balanced, I'm talking about all of the news outlets, and they would include a right-winger like Hugh Hewitt to interrogate Republicans along with CNN employees, but they don't include a progressive journalist this coming Tuesday to join CNN employees in interrogating Democratic candidates. That's just the kind of bias that we've had from CNN. If people want to express their problem with that, they could go to rootsaction.org.
Okay. So I just have one last question before we run out of show. Tell me a little bit more about your work, what you're doing in your classroom, and other things that Roots Action, so, you know, other places that people can plug into what you're doing.
Yeah. Well, rootsaction.org is the website, self-explanatory. I'm a journalism professor at Ithaca College, and I showed the guy from Time and Bloomberg and Martha Raddatz of ABC, Mark Helper and Martha Raddatz, flying around in the helicopter with Donald Trump, Donald Trump's helicopter, as an example of what journalists should not do. So at Ithaca College, I run the Park Center for Independent Media. We study the outlets that are not part of the conglomerated media. We give away an award. You can find us at ithaca.edu/indy, I-N-D-Y. We give an award every year named after Izzy I.F. Stone, called the Izzy Award for Outstanding Achievement in Independent Media. It's been won by Mother Jones. It's been won by Amy Goodman, Glenn Greenwald, Jeremy Scahill, Center for Media and Democracy, Bob Scheer, City Limits. So at Ithaca, we're trying to show some of the journalism students, not all, but the journalism students that are interested, that there's another way to go for your career.
That's awesome.
And that a lot of these new outlets are actually, you know, a lot of them are struggling financially, like community radio, but a lot of them are also hiring. And so that's what our program is about.
Excellent. Hey, Jeff, I just have to leave it there. Sometime I got to have to bring you on for a whole great big show. Thank you so much for being with us today, Jeff Cohen. And
bye-bye.
Hey, listeners, thanks for tuning in. Find out more about Steve Buell's work at Steve Buell, that's B-U-E-L, Portland School Board member on Facebook. Learn about Karanja Cruz, Teaching with Purpose Conference at teachingwithpurpose.com. Jeff Cohen, find the petition calling for CNN to include progressive journalists on the Democratic Party debate next week at rootsaction.org and then ithaca.org/indy. Thanks for tuning in.
Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Call Out for Justice and the Wars. Rally and march on Sunday, October 11th, starting at 1 p.m. at Shemansky Park in Portland. Over 35-piece environmental, police accountability, and other social justice groups from the Portland area will be mobilizing around the 4th.